Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport. We have Elijah Campbell over there hitting the switches, making sure this thing sounds pretty. You know how it goes each and every week. This week, we'll be joined by Michael DiRocco, ESPN NFL Nation Jaguars reporter. That's my guy, man. Look forward to talking some shop with him. And as always, Chris Sanders, Forever Titans receiver, will come on. We'll get that Run TMC going as well. Just talking a little shop, man. Back from the bye week, I feel energized and refreshed. I know you guys do as well. And it's just another opportunity for the Titans to get back on track. This Jaguars game is a great, great opportunity, I have to say, because as you look at what's about to happen and them being able to, you know, go against a team like the Jaguars, who they've beaten three times in a row. They've outscored them 101-59 over the last three games. So obviously it's a great, great moment for the Titans. Ryan Tannehill, if you look at him personally, I think that's another thing that we need to focus on, right? And one of the things that Ryan Tannehill needed to do, and I know a lot of you fans out there, and even some of you fanalists too, Jarrett Stillman, have said that he has to play better. And I agree, he does have to play better. And I actually got to ask Ryan Tannehill about elevating everyone else's game. Because I said, you know, the franchise quarterback sticker has been placed on you. That typically comes with the expectation to elevate the game for those around you. How do you go about doing that? Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, no doubt. It's part of being a leader. It's part of being a quarterback is driving the train, so to speak. You know, pushing the guys around you, whether it be in walkthrough, whether it be in practice, making sure the energy there, the effort's there, pushing the tempo, making sure I'm communicating, elevating, trying to motivate. You know, it all goes into it.
So statistically, it's obviously not a good year for Ryan Tannehill, right? The interceptions are up. I mean, you name it. Everything is not good. However, in the opening, I said the Jaguars are a good opportunity for the Titans to get back on track. Well, let's look at some of the numbers that Ryan Tannehill has had in his time against the Jaguars over the past four starts. 11 touchdowns. 9 of them have been passing, 2 of them rushing. 0 interceptions. The QB rating, 140.7. And then he also posted in each of his overall. Now, in each of those games, he posted a QB rating of at least 105. So I say all those numbers to say this. I would expect a big game from Ryan Tannehill. And one of the things that's happening for the offense is the possible return of Julio Jones. Now, I'll say this. He was designated for return to practice on Monday. He and Tannehill, they got some work in. Tannehill feels that, you know, there's an opportunity for them to continue to grow, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we got to watch Julio Jones on Wednesday during the open portion. He looked pretty solid through the drills. He strided through the routes on air. Now, his first route, he ran kind of like a comeback. And it's actually on my Twitter feed. You can see it with the 61 seconds of Julio Jones. I would love to give you 61 minutes. I'm sure you guys would tune in for the whole thing. But it was 61 seconds from his practice on Wednesday. And you'll see towards the end, the first route on air that he ran, it was a comeback, and he kind of pulled up a little bit. So that's something to monitor. He hasn't been designated for return yet. We'll see how things continue to develop throughout the week. I will say this, though. He did come back and run other routes after that. So that is a positive sign. He was strictly doing striders, right? He wasn't full sprint or anything like that during those routes that he ran. But it was still good to see him back out there. So that's something to take note of for the offense. Now, as far as the defense is concerned, you know, there's a lot to be desired when it comes to the turnover side of things, right? And I think that's something that we need to focus on. But before we do that, I want to get into something else about Coach Vrabel, because I'm looking here and I have this, let's see, let's get to it so we can open it up here. So EDJ Sports, right? They do head coach rankings. And this one is pretty interesting, right? They have Coach Vrabel as the 11th ranked head coach. Now, I'm not exactly sure how you would have him at 11, but looking at the overall, so you have Brandon Staley, Matt LaFleur, and Cliff Kingsbury as the top three on the chart. Mike Tomlin at the bottom. Yeah, I'm ready to crumble this list up and throw it out. But nevertheless, I started it, so we'll continue to go through it. Dan Campbell is the big mover of the week. He jumped 7 spots to number 22. Ron Rivera dropped 4 spots down to number 25. However, Mike Tomlin is at the bottom of these rankings. I don't know what this is based on. Okay, well, let's look at. That thing just threw me off. Let's look at the guys who are ranked above Mike Vrabel. We'll do it that way. But Mike Tomlin at 32 is just it's asinine. But so Brandon Staley is the top coach. We're gonna go 1 through 10. Matt LaFleur, Cliff Kingsbury, Frank Reich is number 4. Sean McDermott number 5. John Harbaugh, number 7. Sirianni. Yeah, I don't know about that one. Coach Sirianni of the Eagles at number 7. Kyle Shanahan, number 8. Sean Payton, number 9. Andy Reid, number 10. And Mike Vrabel, number 11. Right after him is Vic Fangio at 12. Mike McCarthy at 13. But Mike Tomlin at 32. That's... I don't know. Nevertheless, with Mike Vrabel at number 11, I tell you this. I know in talking to these Titans players, Coach Vrabel, he comes up with a message or keys to the game each and every week. And, you know, almost all the guys say, you know, when they win, they say that the keys that they focused on were a big contributor to their win. When they lose, guess what? They say, hey, you know what? We may not have gotten to the keys that we needed to focus on. So I say that because this is a good example of the effectiveness of the message and keys that Mike Vrabel preaches to his guys each and every week. They buy into it. I asked him about just how he gathers that message and also wanted to get some words from him in regards to 3 of the coaches that I know have been an influence on him. Here's what he had to say about that.
And then you had mentioned Ron Rivera, Bill Cowher, obviously Coach Belichick as well. How much did, like, playing for Cowher and Belichick and then your relationship with Rivera, how much does that influence, like, your ability to relate to players? Because it seemed like their guys really loved them, and it seems like your guys love you.
I mean, I think it's all about just building relationships and, you know, we've been through this, about being able to hold players accountable, and I think there has to be a connection there. You have to make a connection with them, you know, to hold them accountable. You know, we all have a job to do, and, you know, we have to be on time. We have to be where we're supposed to be, you know, doing what we're supposed to do to help the team win. And when you find a way to make a connection with them, you know, then it, I think, makes it easier to hold them accountable, or at least how they interpret it, you know, that they're not just singling them out. Obviously, you have to do things that are in the best interest of the team and make sure that everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing.
So you heard what Mike Vrabel said. Now, that lets you know right there that, you know, Ron Rivera, a guy who we never played for, had a big influence on him, right? Bill Cowher, Bill Belichick, these guys all have made emotional deposits. Even Bill Belichick, believe it or not, you talk to some of the guys that have played for him, they really connected to him. So I think that's all a part of being able to get the pulse of the team, find an effective message, and make sure it's communicated to them through the coaches as well and through certain players. Also, I think that's important. And as I said, through players, no coincidence that this week the message that Vrabel started off with for the players was getting back to the basics. Here's Kevin Byard. Note what he says in response to my question about being able to get more turnover.
We just got to get back to, you know, just the fundamentals, getting back to the basics.
obviously, I pride myself on getting a lot of turnovers, but I also understand, you know, how these things work with the pressure and the coverage being coordinated. We just got to get back to having fun and making plays, and I think that'll be a big key for us in this game.
So unprovoked, Byard referenced exactly what the message that Coach Vrabel told us on Monday was going to be, and he reiterated on Wednesday. So that's a good example of an effective message that permeates throughout the team. And I think that is one of the things that can't be measured by this EDJ sports coach rankings that has Coach Vrabel at number 11 and Mike Tomlin at number 32. My goodness. I don't get that one. But so it goes beyond like fourth down calls and offensive passing and rushing. And I think a part of being a head coach is being a people manager. And I think that's why Mike Vrabel is such a good coach, because he is able to manage people. He knows which buttons to push within each guy's. I swear, I wish you guys and girls could go to a Titans practice, a full practice, and just follow Coach Vrabel around throughout those practices. And you'll understand why it is that I emphasize the management side of things and the being able to relate side of things. One of the things that he mentioned was empathy. And as a former player, he's able to be more empathetic and understanding of the things that these guys are going through. So that's a critical thing. On another note, just before we wrap it up, My Cause, My Cleats is this week. Ryan Tannehill thought it was pretty cool. He's wearing cleats for Life Water, which is an organization that provides clean drinking water to villages in Africa. And it's crazy. You know, something as simple as drinking water that we take for granted, it's not there for other people. So that's a great thing that Tannehill is doing, you know, to support that. Kevin Byard, the Byard Family Foundation, there, his My Cause, My Cleats are going to have that on there. And if you don't know about that organization, really it's just a community organization to make sure that everyone has access to the things that they need. And it also, you know, wants to make sure that people who are deserving of a second chance are getting that second chance. So I thought that was really awesome on Byard's part as well. All of the guys are going to be doing My Cause, My Cleats. I'll be sure to bring you as much information about that as possible, because I think it's important, right, to get an understanding of what it is that's important to these guys, right? They're not just characters on the field that you watch play. I mean, these are people. So getting underneath the helmet is a cool thing to do. So I definitely make sure I do as much as I can to bring that to you. Make sure you guys stick around. We're going to go to Run TMC after we pay these bills, and we'll be right back. Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to freedomtireguys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at freedomtireguys.com.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
You already know. My favorite part is coming. The strings. That's right. Run TMC. Talking with TD back from the break. Ooh, that music's going down. The lights are dimming.
Oh, here we go.
And now, starting for your 1983 Philadelphia 76ers at center, number 53. Darryl Chocolate Thunder Dawkins.
And now, one of the Jackson Five.
No.
Tito Jackson.
Slow down, Tito Dam.
What's up, man? What's up?
What's going on?
What these Titans going to do this week?
Hey, man, listen.
They had a week off. You know, got some rest. Man, what you think they're going to do this week?
Had a week off. They got some rest. the message that Mike Vrabel had, I touched on it in a previous segment, the message that he had for the guys was back to the basics, man. Stick to the fundamentals, the things that are necessary to execute your individual assignment to the fullest. And I think that's what they have to do. This game against the Jaguars, and here's the thing, right? You know, we look at these schedules and we say, hey, look, you know, all right, you got this team win, you got that team win, you got this team. Well, listen, on paper, yeah, it might be that. But I think when you have divisional games, things are a little different. And don't get it twisted. This Jaguars defense, I went back and watched some of the things. You know, I watched the Bills game, in fact, Chris, and they had four sacks in that game. Josh Allen had two. And they do some things to showcase him as far as stunts and twists. And, you know, they kind of have some of the interior guys be like the sacrificial lamb, you know, to take on the block so that he could loop inside and get to the quarterback. And that's exactly what I drew up for Whiteboard Wednesday. So, while I think this is a win for the Titans, I don't think it's a walk in the park.
Oh, absolutely not, because you don't want to sit up there and look like the Vikings last week when you played against Detroit. I mean, it's the NFL, because any team can beat any team. And we got to understand something. This is a rivalry game. This goes back to when I played in 1999. Because when in 1999, when we played the Jacksonville Jaguars, they were 14-2, and how many times did they lose us? Twice. So you better believe that the Jags don't like the Tennessee Titans, and it will take great pleasure for them to come down and beat the Tennessee Titans. And I agree with you 100%, man. This is, you know, even though their record is bad, they're like 2-10, and we're 8-4. Don't get it twisted, man. They're playing good football. They're playing hard on defense. They have some explosive guys on offense like Marvin Jones and then James Robinson with 678 yards and running the ball. So, you know, if the Tennessee Titans don't start fast and come out and punch them in the mouth, it could be a long day.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what happened in the last game. They started out fast, you know, a defensive touchdown. They punched them in the mouth, but that game was closer than it should have been. So,
and they had Henry.
Yeah, and they had Derrick Henry. So don't think – and Derrick Henry has been the ultimate killer of the Jaguars for the most part. Now, last time it was a so-so game. But the big play in that game, right, the explosive they got, it was the 58-yarder. LaVisca Chenault, you know, and he's a guy that they use out of the backfield. They use him as a receiver. He runs hard, man, and he's an explosive player. I want to see if the Jaguars do more to get him the football. But you mentioned James Robinson. You mentioned also, let's look at Carlos Hyde. You know, these are guys that they run the ball together with. That rushing attack of the Jaguars, what are your thoughts on that, and how can that help this game up?
I mean, because the thing about it is, you know, just like I said, Robinson has 678 yards, because if they control the ball and take time off the clock, it keeps the Tennessee Titans off the field. So, you know, they run the ball pretty good. I mean, James Robinson, if you look at a year ago, he gassed us.
Definitely.
He gassed the Tennessee Titans. So, you know, I think the Tennessee Titans with Simmons and Autry and those guys, they're going to have to come to play to really stuff that run and keep them, you know, from having a long drive.
This is another one of those games where, you know, the Jaguars are 2-10, right?
Right. They have nothing to lose.
They have nothing to lose, but at the same time, you want to go out there right from the start, you know, and really take it to them.
Yep.
You know, and this is something I said they should have done against the Texans. And they tried to, right? They tried to come out with the urgency.
Right.
They went tempo and those type of things. I think it's really important. I mean, honestly, my game plan, I would go play action. I'm taking a deep shot. I don't care if Julio Jones is playing or not. I'm play action, taking a deep shot to somebody, right? And I'm going to have that post with the dig underneath it. So if it's not a explosive, right, a 40-plus yarder, it's a 20-yarder. And then right off of that, I'm going tempo and I'm running the football. And you just want to get the Jaguars in that mindset, right? It's like that DMX song, you know, here we go again. You want them to like, oh, man, like, all right. And they're 0-5 away, by the way. So, you know, this team is used to you losing on the road. You want to take the quit and pull it out of them immediately.
Yeah, and also, too, Big Dog, the Titans need to be aggressive, exactly what you said. If you win the coin toss, and everybody, you know, kind of thinks that it's nonchalant or it's just kind of funny. No. If you win the coin toss, you take the ball, you get a 50-play drive, you stuff it down the throat, you score, not field goals, you score a touchdown, and then that doubt will start to creep. But if you go and you get a 3-and-out, and then all of a sudden the Jaguars score, and you get another 3-out, it's 14-0, you just gave a team that was dying life. Because what? you let them in the game.
Yeah, and this Jaguars team, they're predominantly passing, right? And you look at it, you know, they're averaging 15 points a game, mm-hmm. right? They're allowing 26 points a game. This should be an opportunity to, absolutely. You know, to have a 30-14, 35-14 type game. And that's what they need to get back on track, because what do you want to do as you're getting towards the playoffs? You want to get better. And yep. this game could be a really big launching pad for the Titans towards putting that nonsense away from the last 2 weeks. And another thing with this, right, and you look at the Texans game again, I'm going to go back to that one because these were two teams on the opposite side of the spectrum. In fact, one at that time had the best record in the conference. The other had the worst. But you had the ultimate equalizer.
Yep.
5 turnovers. Limit those turnovers this week.
I mean, you can't do that. And I think the Tennessee Titans need to play great in all facets of the game. On offense, just like you said, they can't have turnovers. Guys got to catch the ball. You know, Tannehill can't get sacked. The offensive line has to block. And then on special teams, we can't have a mishap what we had against the Texans. What do you yell when the ball's coming close to you?
Peter,
you
know? Peter, Peter.
That means get the heck out of the
exactly.
way. Exactly. Yeah. It don't mean stand there. It means get up out the way.
I asked Coach Aukerman about that. I was like, hey man, like it, you know, I get wanting to draw the defender to you so that the ball doesn't get down inside the 5 yard line, but you know. Why not? Why are we not yelling, Peter, 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 and just getting the heck out of harm's way? And
yeah.
He agreed that it was, you know, Rodgers, Chester Rodgers was trying to make a play. But, you know, sometimes making a play is walking away. You know what I mean? So yeah. That's probably what he needed to do in that case.
Yeah, but the ball was going in the end zone.
Yeah.
It was about 5 or 6 yards into the end zone. It's going to go in the end zone. So, man, just get up out the way. And then on defense, I think we got to get back to getting turnovers. I mean, the last Absolutely. Two games, we didn't have no turnover against the Patriots. We didn't have a turnover against the Texans. The Tennessee Titans that need to make some turnovers are by getting an interception, a scoop and score, and getting the ball into their hands and making plays.
Man, Dylan Cole had a chance. He had a chance. I think it was that game. Was it that game or the Texans game? Was it the Texans game or the Patriots game?
Who's that?
Dylan Cole, he had an interception, but it hit him in a bad
Patriots.
Spot.
Patriots.
That was the Patriots. It hit him in a bad spot, right in the hands, you know, it fell incomplete. That's a turnover. That you know, when things are going right, that ball is picked off. But when they're not, it gets knocked down like it did.
Yeah, but here's the key to the whole game, TD, is the Tennessee Titans need to come out with momentum.
Yeah,
I mean. The Jaguars are not going to lay down and be like, okay, you're the Tennessee Titans, you're going to the playoffs, and we're not. They're not going to do that. They're going to play hard because the one thing we got to understand, the reason why they're going to play hard is because there's a lot of guys on this team that are auditioning for other teams.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't play hard, if they're, you know, lackadaisical, they're not playing tougher, they're not reading their keys, other teams are going to see that and say, we don't want you. But if you go out and play, you get an interception here, you make a touchdown there, you may be playing for a team on a team next year.
Yeah, you're definitely – it's a tryout. It's an audition, as you said. So that's something else to keep in mind. Trevor Lawrence, and you see him continue to mm-hmm. kind of develop and make his stand. 10 interceptions this year.
Right.
When you have – just as a receiver, right, when you have a quarterback that could do what he can do as far as extending plays and pushing the ball down the field, what are some of the advantages that gives you?
Man, you know what? You know, I like Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he's going to be good in the NFL right now. Just like you said, he has 10 interceptions, but he's thrown for over 2,500 yards and completing 58% of his passes. But you know what makes him dangerous? Dangerous is his legs.
Mm-hmm.
He makes you dangerous because if the pocket breaks down, he can extend the play. The Tennessee Titans are going man-to-man coverage. He gets a 30-yard run. So I think the defense needs to be aware of that. I think, you know, Kevin Byard, I don't know where they're going to play him on the field, or, you know, a linebacker, make sure they spy on him and make sure he doesn't have those long runs. Because even though he might not have the numbers, he has the legs to kill you downfield and keep the chains moving.
Yeah, it's that double threat type of thing that he brings, you know. And you know, you typically say that for other quarterbacks, but he definitely has that. And I think that's something to take note of. I want to see just how this game plays out, though.
Me too, man. Does it make you nervous a little bit?
I think it's a game that I wouldn't be overconfident going into this. And it goes back to another message that Mike Vrabel has said. I have an actual post coming out. That's why I keep mentioning the messages, because that's fresh in my mind.
Uh-huh.
Earlier this year, I think it was the Saints game. He mentioned how he spoke to Tim Corbin, the Vanderbilt baseball head coach, and talking about staying centered, right? Not getting too high, not getting too low, and understanding that you got to perform, you know, in both circumstances, when things are going good and when things are going bad. And I think that's a message that really applies to this game, right? Things have gone bad for them the last couple of weeks. So now it's trying to stay centered, make them go right, and I think you really have to use this, as I said earlier, as a launching board towards a successful stretch. You know, you got a 2-game lead over the Colts. You're right there at the number 2 seed, well within striking distance of the Patriots, you know, who have another date with the Bills, you know what I mean, even though they can't run the frippin' football, the Bills, that is. But, you know, we'll see how that works out. But I think, you know, this thing definitely – the Titans are in good shape right now.
They're 8-4.
Right.
Yeah, they're 8-4, but here's the thing. You know, they just got to come out with confidence. I mean, that's all it is. It's a confidence thing. I mean, when you're it's like kind of like being a wide receiver. If you drop the ball like 3 times in a row, but all of a sudden on that 4th time you catch a bomb for 89 yards, your confidence starts to build. Yep. And that's the same thing with the Titans. Somebody gets a pick here. You have Hiller that runs a 70-yard touchdown, or, you know, Julio Jones gets a 15, 60-yard pass for a touchdown. It ignites the offense. It ignites the defense. It ignites the fans, and everybody has that confidence, and then you feel it. But if you come out and you start slow, you lay an egg, 3 and out, the Jaguars score. Next, you know, you get the ball again, you throw an interception. It just gets in your mind like, man, are we even a good team? So they need to come out fast, get confident, make some plays early, and hit them in the mouth, and let's go eat, baby.
Make it happen, Captain. That's really what it boils down to.
Yes, sir.
Well, Hakeem Olajuwon, I appreciate you helping me out here, pushing me through this segment.
Hey, man, I was talking to somebody that was like, man, that dude looked just like Gary Coleman. I'm like, you are exactly right.
Well, I guess on Thursday for the TD Power Hour, we'll have Gary Coleman and John Candy, huh? Well, you said that's Jared good. Looked like John Candy, man. Hey. I still can't unsee that, man.
Hey, I'm going to call y'all and talk bad about y'all, man. Because John Candy and Gary Coleman, that's not a good match.
Hey, I don't think you're immune to it either, Arsenio Hall.
With the long finger. Man, I appreciate you, Doc.
All right, man, we're out.
He's out.
This is Elijah Molden. I'm talking with TD. All my life, been grinding all my life.
Sacrifice, hustle, pay the price. All right, back from the break. Man, Nipsey, he says, grinding all my life. My next guest, he's going to be grinding all his life to be able to cover a Super Bowl down there with the Jaguars. But nevertheless, we get to talk every season, twice a year. This is the second go-round. ESPN, NFL Nation, Jacksonville Jaguars reporter, patient man himself, Michael DeRocco. What's going on, my brother?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
Hey, man, I guess we could say we're doing, outside of the weather, we're doing better than you are down there, I guess we could say, because at least there's some interest in this team up here, man.
Yeah, it's this is not a strange occurrence for me down here, except for 1 year in 2017. This has pretty much been kind of par for the course for this franchise.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. So I guess, well, here's where we'll start, because the last time we talked, there was just turmoil galore. I mean, if it wasn't the coach coming home the day after or whatever, missing how, whenever he came back, you had other stuff as far as the dysfunction within the building. So weeks later, has any of that stuff started to clear up?
Well, that stuff has pretty much, you know, calmed down. But we've moved to the different kind of dysfunction here now with James Robinson and him getting benched for fumbling and Carlos Hyde fumbling but not getting punished as much. You know, you've got the quarterback on, you know, in his weekly media session talking about, yeah, he made his feelings known that he wants James on the field, James Robinson on the field. So, you know, it's the James Robinson saga, as we are calling it down here, is in full swing. So hopefully that'll calm down soon in a little bit, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, and as you mentioned in your post, and folks, you can check this out on ESPN.com. You check out the Jaguars page. I suggest doing that anyway because that's your way to get up to date on your team's opponent this week. But on your post, Mike, you said it wasn't a careless fumble. Aaron Donald ripped it out of his hands as he was being tackled. Now, that's something that happens. Like, it's not like Aaron Donald doesn't do that to a lot of backs. So let's compare that to the fumble by Carlos Hyde. What happened with that one to even just like warrant a different punishment?
Yeah, it's really bizarre here because you know they've just seemed to have treated James Robinson so much more differently than Carlos Hyde. But Hyde's fumble was more because he was a little bit more careless with the ball. The ball was kind of hanging out there. He had it kind of loose, but you know, maybe Robinson didn't have the ball completely tucked under his chin the way Urban Meyer wants him to, but I mean, he had the ball up against his body, and Aaron Donald just absolutely, you know, Aaron Donald's pretty good.
Right.
You know, he made a play, and good for him, you know, but I just, you know, with Carlos Hyde, the ball being out there really loose, and it's fumbled, and he's back in on the next drive, and James Robinson missed 20 plays. And then you go back to the week before against Atlanta, and he fumbles, and maybe that one was a little bit more careless, and he misses 16 plays. So it just really didn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. And then you've got Urban Meyer saying, you know what, I don't micromanage the running back rotation. That's on Bernie Parmalee, the running back's coach, and then him talking about, you know, he used to be a micromanager. He certainly was when I was covering him at University of Florida, and. He stopped doing that because it was just too much, and he was getting in the assistant coach's ways, and it's their responsibility to handle this kind of stuff. So, you know, that's kind of why it's been so so bizarre here, because they're also, you know, dealing with Robinson with a heel and a knee injury, and, you know, oh, he was on the bench because, you know, we're trying to manage his workload, and then you go, well, if you're managing his workload because of an injury, why did he have three carries in the final 2 minutes of the game? You're losing by 30 points. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what, you know, the Jags are dealing with at this point. So, you know, maybe Urban said that he's probably going to be a little bit more involved in the receiver and running back rotation. So we'll see if that has any kind of change to it. But, you know, as of right now, it's just kind of – everyone's just kind of scratching their head around here because they just can't figure out why this team doesn't appreciate James Robinson as much as they should.
It's just amazing to me just how – because this guy seemed to have so much favor by the previous coaching staff. So it's just like – it's not like he suddenly fell apart. I think it screams favoritism, right? And yeah. There's obviously a relationship there. Hyde ran for him at Ohio State. It's just so many things, man. Like you mentioned not being a micromanager, but now he is going to get more involved in it. Like which one is it going to be? I don't know. I didn't realize that there was this level of dysfunction coming with Urban Meyer. Like I thought that he would come in and really make a quick difference for this organization. I mean, am I off by thinking that?
No, I thought the same thing too. Because the Urban I covered and the Urban that won three national championships, two at Florida, one at Ohio State, was the micromanaging Urban Meyer. Mm. You know, he said that he kind of got away from that the last part of his career at Ohio State. But, you know, that's what made him such a good coach, was that and such a guy that won so many games, is that he wasn't micromanaging everything. Now, was it good for his health? Probably not. Did he piss off his assistant coaches? Yeah, he sure did. But they won, and they won big. You know, I think I expected a bigger difference too with Urban this season, but you know, this is a very, very talent poor roster. It's filled mostly with just, like I call them, just guys. You know what I mean? There's
Jags.
A couple of stars here and there, you know, but they're just guys. But,
yeah.
But to go back to James Robinson, Urban Meyer loves the speed guys. He loves, you know, at Florida, he had Jeff Demps and Chris Rainey and, you know, even at Ohio State, you know, Zeke was faster than James Robinson is. And you know, he's not – James Robinson's not Dalvin Cook. He's not a guy that, you know, can take it to the house. I mean, he's not even as fast as Derrick Henry, who is much faster than people give him credit for.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a guy that's a threat to score from anywhere on the field. And, you know, that's the kind of back that Urban likes, and that's sort of why they drafted – Travis Etienne,
yeah,
and then he gets hurt, so that's completely out of the question for them to use him, obviously. But you know, at the time I thought that the Carlos Hyde signing was okay because it was a guy that could kind of give, you know, James Robinson a drive or two off here and there. I mean, he's 31 years old. He's not a workhorse back anymore, but he can give you, you know, 6 to 8 to 10 carries a game. But it just seemed like from the beginning that they just were really much more high on Carlos Hyde than they were on James Robinson. And it really made no sense to us. Yeah. You know, he, like I said, he's not a game-breaking back, but he's pretty darn good. And his numbers last year, I think he averaged 4.7 yards a carry. He's actually, before going into last week's game, he was averaging over 5 a carry, even as banged up as he is. So he's a pretty darn effective back, and it's just crazy how they don't appreciate him.
Yeah, he was good for my fantasy team last year, I tell you that much. We're talking to Mike DiRocco, ESPN NFL Nation Jaguars reporter. Let's flip it to the other side of the ball. You mentioned, you know, talent being kind of lacking on this team, but one person that is very talented and one person that I just love watching is Josh Allen. How has he been? Just like, it's got to be crazy for him, because like, this guy is the one dude on this defense that you're like, okay, yeah, he could go anywhere, start and be effective. How have you seen him just kind of carry through all of this muck and foolishness that's going on?
Yeah, he's done a really good job of kind of blocking all that stuff out. But he is, you know, DeJuan Smoot on the other side is the complimentary guy, but really Josh Allen is the man as a pass rusher here in Jacksonville. You know, the move back to the outside linebacker spot has helped him out a little bit. I think it's, you know, he's much more comfortable there. That's where he played at Kentucky. And, you know, he's dropping into coverage, you know, more. And you know, he had the interception against the Buffalo Bills. That was a big game for him when he played against the other Josh Allen, as everybody here in Jacksonville now says. You know, and he has been, you know, there were some questions about him because, you know, his rookie year he had 10.5 sacks, but he had it when Unique Ngakoue and Calais Campbell were on the field. And, you know, last year he got hurt, wasn't really effective, and then missed the second half of the season. So this was sort of a kind of a prove-it year for him, and he's done a really good job. He's been by far their best pass rusher, and he's done some good work against the run, setting the edge, too, when he's had to. So he's probably having his – his numbers may not be as high as they were sack-wise as a rookie, but I think he's having his best year this year, which is fantastic because they need him because they don't have much on that side of the ball.
Now, on the other side of him, or just like one of the other linebacker spots, right, Jahad Ward is over Kalavon Chasen. I thought that was interesting as far as the depth chart is concerned. What has happened there? Because he was supposed to be that complimentary guy that allowed them to move on from Ngakoue, right, and still have what they thought would be two effective edge guys.
Yeah, he's just not done anything. I mean, I can't even say that he's flashed, to be honest with you, because, I mean, there just isn't anything that stands out. He's got 2 sacks. He's played in every game the last 2 years, and he's got 2 sacks. And he's the 20th overall pick, and it's just, you know, he's just not getting it done as a pass rusher. You know, Jahad Ward has been okay, but he hasn't really been spectacular. He hasn't played great. You know what I mean? I would just consider him one of those guys again. And you know, DeJuan Smoot has outplayed both of them, you know, as a defensive end and sometimes linebacker as well. And that's not good for the Jags, because here's the guy that, you know, Kalavon Chasen was part of that Jalen Ramsey trade. He's one of the guys they picked, they selected when they traded Jalen Ramsey, and it's just not worked out. And, you know, next year is, I mean, going to be a huge year for him, because he's going to have to prove that he can at least do something. I mean, he'll have had a year in this defense, so maybe you give him a bit of a break for, you know, adjusting from last year having his hand in the ground and now moving back to outside linebacker. So maybe, you know, a year in the system will help him a little bit, but man, he's an invisible guy on the field. Even when he's, you know, if you notice him running onto the field, you don't notice him again until he's running off the field, because he just doesn't make any plays. And you know, like I said, that's part of their problem. They just do not have a ton of talent on this team.
That's a darn shame. Okay, so how about the cornerback position? You got Shaq Griffin, Tyson Campbell. Obviously, it's early this week, so we don't know for sure. But what's the latest on them, in your opinion, your Wednesday opinion, or are they going to be able to go, or what are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, I think both of them should play. Shaq is going to come off out of the concussion protocol later this week. He spoke with us a little while ago, and he's going to play. And Urban Meyer said Tyson Campbell should play as well, so which is good because they're their two best corners. And Campbell has really come on the last 3 weeks. He had the best game of his career against Atlanta, notched his first interception, got banged up a little bit last week with a hip. But now he's gonna play, so there's no concern about that. So that's gonna be good because, you know, Julio's supposed to be back, right? That's what the potential is, or
potentially
yet, I'm not sure. Yeah, you know, so that's gonna be good because, you know, if they need their top two corners. Last week after Shaq didn't play last week, and then Campbell went out in the second half against the Rams, and it all fell apart in the second half after Campbell went out. I mean, Cooper Kupp went nuts, and OBJ was running free. So, you know, you can't this defense really can't function without, you know, at least one of those two guys there because they've got so many question marks everywhere else.
It's good to know that Campbell is coming on. He's a corner that I like. I actually had a first-round grade on him. He was, what, a 33rd pick? So it was, you know, right in line with that. I'm glad that he's coming along. Listen, they got to do something to get those ball skills together. But, you know, other than that, he can turn and run with some guys. But, man, you ask him to catch a football, man, that's like asking me to you know, run through this wall. It's not happening.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, you would rather have the guy that's in position
right. That
doesn't really make the play all the time because at least you'd figure the law of averages would turn out that he would make a play, as opposed to the guy who's never in position to make a play. but his ball skills have gotten a little bit better, you know, and he had a couple of pass breakups against the Falcons as well. So you're starting to see him, you know. I don't necessarily know that you can take a guy that doesn't have good ball skills and then make him somebody that has really good ball skills.
Right.
But I think you can do some things that can help him, you know, get the head around quicker, find the ball, a little bit more eye discipline, that kind of stuff. And, you know, you can improve it a little bit. And I think that's where he is at this point right now.
Before I get you out of here, definitely have to look at Trevor Lawrence. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about him. So his development as a passer in the midst of all this craziness, what are your thoughts there?
Now, we haven't even talked about how bad the receivers are here yet. We could go on for like another hour about that stuff. It's just they're still running. Like Laviska Shenault is still having trouble running the wrong routes. There was a fourth down play, I think it was against the Falcons, where you know, Trevor had fourth and 10, and, you know, Trevor threw the ball as if it was going to be a 12-yard route, and Laviska Shenault kept going. There's a lot of communication issues going on here. The receivers really don't get any separation, and they don't do a really good job scheme-wise of getting those guys open. It's a lot of asking those guys to go out and, you know, beat man coverage, and they're just not able to do it. And, you know, Trevor drops back and he looks around and you can see it when you're watching, obviously, from the press box or in the stadium. You know, it's option one is covered, option two is covered, and option three is covered. So now what the heck do you do? And I say all that because you look at Trevor Lawrence's numbers and they're not very good at all. But that all factors into the lack of the really good play from the wide receivers.
Yeah.
He's cut down on his interceptions. He's cut down on his turnovers. You know, he has been certainly, you know, he took a lot more chances early in the season, you know, but a lot of the stuff that he's throwing now is some short, maybe a few intermediate routes here, but they're not taking shots down the field because they don't have that deep speed. But it'll be interesting to see how he plays this week because, you know, we just talked to Trevor Lawrence a little bit ago, and his thing was like, you know what, I just got to go out there and cut it loose.
Yep.
I just got to go have fun and just fling it around. So maybe we'll see some more downfield shots, but you know, his numbers, like I said, don't look great, especially when you compare him to a guy like Mac Jones. But he has made strides. It's just that you would need, if you're the Jaguars, you need to make finding some more weapons for him a high priority, maybe the number one priority, and make wide receiver a priority in free agency and wide receiver a priority in the draft. But, you know, look, it's one of those years that, you know, he's never had this kind of lack of success before in his career, in high school or at Clemson. So it's a learning process for him to go through as well. But, you know, everybody here still talks about his poise and his confidence, you know, and how smart he is. So from that standpoint, you know, the progress has been really, really good. It's just the numbers don't look it. But he'll still make two or three throws a game where you go, whoa, wow. And, you know, around here, we haven't seen quarterbacks that can do that in a very, very, very long time. So overall positive, but the numbers may not necessarily show it.
You mean Blaine Gabbert and Blake Bortles didn't they didn't make you go, whoa, from a positive side of things?
Blake Bortles would occasionally make you go, whoa, but it wasn't a good whoa.
Yeah, the old double agent himself. Boy, he played for both teams.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Well, hey, man, I really appreciate you coming on. Jackrabbit Jenkins may not play this week. That's something, just a little nugget to drop in this show real quick. He got banged up pretty well in the Patriots game, and it wasn't something where they were going to put him on IR, but there's a good chance he doesn't play. So a little nugget there for you guys. Along with the multiple nuggets that my guy Mike DiRocco gave you, I appreciate you coming on. You already know what to do, man. Hit me on Saturday. We'll figure it out. You know, if you want to grab something, we could go do that.
Absolutely. Thank you, bud. I appreciate you having me.
You got it, man. Take care. So that was Michael DiRocco with a bunch of information about the Jaguars. I guess it hasn't really gotten better. There's still issues. Make sure you stay tuned to ESPN.com, Jaguars page, Titans page as well. That way you get all the updates. Whiteboard Wednesday, as I alluded to, Josh Allen, using him on stunts. That's something that we've pointed out, so check that out as well. Talking with TD is the show. Google Podcast, Spotify, iTunes, rate, review. We appreciate you. Be sure you tune in to 102.5 The Game as well. Hey, listen, we're going to plug it all. Got the TD Power Hour on Thursdays, Mondays, 11 a.m. with Darren, Donathan, Chase. Friday, 8 a.m., we do it again with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad. Oh, and Sunday game day, Jarrett Stillman, Mark Howard, Chris Sanders coming on to talk a little chop. I'll be on there live from Nissan Stadium. So appreciate each of you for tuning in. God bless and good night.